Impress your friends. Amaze your coworkers. Make your family proud. Here's what you need to know.
I'ma tell you what you need to know. I'ma tell you what you need to hear. Cause the truth will be too much. Yeah, the truth will be, yeah, the truth will be. I'ma tell you what you need to know. I'ma tell you what you need to hear.
What you eating there, Lebo?
Yogurt.
Yogurt.
Todd Lebo in for Seren Petro. Petro been listening? He hasn't texted me and said it's been awful, so I'm assuming
he hasn't texted me either.
Yeah.
So he probably realized how awful it was and then just turned it off.
Probably to remove the temptation.
Well, he told me he was going to watch a movie. Like they're working their way through some Avengers and things.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, they're trying to go in chronological order, I think.
Something. So he told me he was going to do that after at 1:59. He said, should I do the show? I'm like, dude, you're off yesterday. Don't worry about it. And then I said, please don't listen. But then, even though he was off, he was Zooming today.
Yeah.
Couldn't
miss that one.
This is what happens. It's so easy to kind of work Zoom work. Like, we were off last Friday, the 3rd, and we were off on the 4th because of the holiday. We were off on the 5th. But I was on a Royals Zoom every one of those days, more than once, generally, because I was just sitting at home.
We're off on the 4th because it was Saturday.
Moving around with the Zooming wherever I could.
Yeah.
I'm gonna do. My wife got mad at me this morning because I was on the Matheny morning Zoom, the MMZ.
Oh yeah.
And I told you I'd been moving from spot to spot. Yeah, a different part of the estate, I like to say, another part of the manse, as it were. And I was in the study.
Lebo Manor.
Yeah, and so I'm zooming. And
you have a study.
I have headphones in, so there's no noise coming out of the computer or anything. And my wife comes down the stairs, and she entered the study, but I kind of held my hand up like, hold on, there's a Zoom happening here. And then she was kind of mad, like, why didn't you tell me there was some Zoom? I'm like, you know about the MMZ. Every morning at 8:15. Anyway, she was not on. She wasn't walking in the background.
The morning Zoom?
No, I'm just the Matheny morning Zoom.
Oh, the MMZ. Okay.
Yeah, the MMZ.
I see.
So I need to do a better job of telling her what time there's a Zoom and where in our estate I will be during the Zoom. Almost got in trouble today.
Do you consider framing and stuff?
Oh, absolutely.
Even though it's not going anywhere.
I told
anywhere,
you, I had the accent wall. I had the curtains outside.
Yeah. You don't want it has nothing to do with like the list, because no one's going to see it. But you don't want your fellow media people to think you have the worst house.
I'm going to get in front of a bookcase tomorrow, maybe.
Everyone clicks off the Zoom and people start texting. God, did you see Lebo's room?
It's true. I told Alec Lewis yesterday that I was reading a book. I did that for a little while.
Well, earlier, you had a dirty bookcase.
Well, I do have a dirty bookcase. That's in the office here, though. I began reading a book out of boredom a few weeks ago, but I haven't picked it back up. But I'm going to finish it. It's one of those John Grisham books. Those are easy reads.
You should put things in the background that just intentionally to see if anybody will ask you.
No,
about
I don't
it.
Do that. But I do try to frame it up well enough to where, photojournalist training, try to make it look nice.
Yeah. Well, no real crazy backgrounds today for Brett Veach, Andy Reid, and
Andy
Reid
had a bunch of football helmets behind him.
Where he was.
Because Andy Reid was out in California, I guess, and he had a neat shelf of football helmets, all kinds of things. It was pretty cool. We will tell you before, we're going to play some Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid, and Brett Veach, but we want to tell you that the breaking news out of the Royals today was that Ryan O'Hearn and Brad Keller have both tested positive for COVID, so they'll be away from the team.
Keller was symptomatic, said it felt like an allergy attack, and Ryan O'Hearn was not symptomatic.
So we'll see how that goes there. Salvador Perez had already tested positive earlier, and Mike Matheny, the Royals manager, had gone through the ordeal and had COVID. So that's what's happening out there. They had an interleague game today, or an intra-squad game today. Everything went well with that. Maybe we'll hear from Mike Matheny later in the hour, but let's talk Chiefs right now.
Speaking of baseball, how about a nice little segue here? That was not our intention. But, a lot has been talked about the baseball-style contract that Patrick Mahomes has, and Brett Veach talked about how this became such a contract.
When we started doing free agent contracts in 18, we did so with the mindset of structuring those deals to allow for a deal of a franchise quarterback level. Now, the bigger or broader concepts, the baseball type contracts was something that, as the 18th season went along and as we turned into the 19th season, Brant Tillis that was an ongoing project for him. And he would literally come down to my office in the spring of last year and talk about, I'm thinking about this, I'm thinking about that. Hopefully, you know, we can refine these ideas and concepts even more. And then when we get to this stage, we'll have something to work from. And so a lot of credit to those guys. But this was something that we talked about different forms of this. And as, you know, Pat's success continued to climb, we geared more towards this type of concept. So, again, just a lot of good foresight from the staff that I have working for me.
Been a lot of work. We said yesterday this was not just some standard rookie contract. This is an ordeal here. This is a lot of stuff. But everything went well during the negotiations. Yeah. That's the part that's cool about this, because they had a player who wanted to be here. They had an organization that wanted him to be here. And they had a player who was willing, because he knows how important it is to have great players around him. I think every player wants to have great players on a team, but a quarterback wants it more than probably anybody else, right? I mean, sure, if you're a lineman, it'd be great if the quarterback's good and the other offensive lineman's good and everything like that. But for a quarterback, you need these other players to be really good for you to do what you need to do,
yes,
right?
Very much
so. They know, Patrick Mahomes knew coming in that he had a great team around him. They had just won the Super Bowl, and he wanted to be here and wanted to be a part of this thing. That's a good, you know, first step in negotiations to have people both want the same thing.
And Brant Tillis, who you heard referred to there by Brett Veach as the team's director of football administration, the other name you might have heard today and not known who it was Chris, if you ever said who for the full name, that's Chris Shea. He's the football operations counsel and personal executive of the Chiefs. So if you hear Chris or that those names coming up, that's who those people are. You talked about the deal and everyone getting along. One of the things Brett Veach noticed was that the negotiations with Patrick Mahomes were unusually smooth.
It was unique in the sense that there was never a sense of we need to win this or we have to win this. This was how can we get this done? And again, that goes back to Pat, because ultimately Chris and Lee work for Pat, and Pat has to have, again, I keep repeating myself, this long-term vision on what he wants his legacy to be. But there was never a sense, and again, I've seen it in all different forms and fashions with bigger deals and longer deals, there's always a contentious point. And I don't think it ever reached that, because we were just all on the same page. We were all committed to making this work. Certainly Pat is deserving of the largest contract in U.S. sports history. But how can we get creative to recognize him, to set those benchmarks, but also find a way that we can surround him with talent and he can go out there and have fun and do the things that he's capable of. And, you know, I think, Sam, to your question, I think that having that relationship and again, going back to Chris and I talking about this vision back in 17 and now that we're here, let's continue this. And how can we turn one Super Bowl into 2, 3, and 4 and, you know, continue to add to Pat's legacy?
And one of the things talking about not being contentious, and we talked about the synergy of the three earlier, I mean, part of that is certainly trust. And Patrick Mahomes says he has had trust in the organization. It was a big factor in signing the long-term deal.
Yeah, I mean, I think trust is something that's built. And I feel like with my 3 years that I've been in the Chiefs organization, you see the trust that everyone has within each other. Everything that Coach Reed says, everything that Veach says, and everyone in this organization says, that those things happen and they put in the work every single day. It's like a challenge if I can try to beat Coach Reed or Veach to the facility one of these days. I mean, they put in as much effort as anyone. And when you have a culture like that from the top down, from Clark Hunt all the way down to the 75th, 90th, whatever it is, man on the roster. I mean, that's the trust and that culture is something that I want to be a part of. And it's something that's built every single day. And it's been built every day I've been a part of this organization.
It's amazing kind of the parallels in some respects with the Royals, well, they've done things. I mean, it's, you call it a Midwestern vibe or whatever, but I mean, you hear that family, the caring about everyone, strength at the top on both sides. And I mean, I don't know that there's a reason for both of those two. They share the same parking lot essentially, but that can't be it.
Well, I think it's leadership. You know, there's no doubt about that, but you know, the contrast to that is the fact that there's different rules in football as there are in baseball. And I heard Stephen and Nate this morning talking about this, that, like, you know, it was so much fun in 14 and 15 mm-hmm. with the Royals, but you kind of knew that it wasn't going to last forever
yeah.
because these players, because of the way baseball works, were going to leave Kansas City because of the way that sport works. You're just not going to be able to get the kind of money that you can get here. The Kansas City Chiefs, who are in the same parking lot as the Kansas City Royals, in the same market size, just gave the largest contract in North American sports to a player. The Royals couldn't do that because of the way the finances of those sports work. So, you know, that's the different part and the different feel about how, you know, in 15 when the Royals won, it didn't feel like it was the end because a lot of those guys were going to be around for a little bit, right? But they weren't going to be around
for 12 years.
Yeah, you thought there'd be a little, and they were okay the next couple of years.
They
weren't going to be able to keep that core of players together, and that's just different in football. And that's why,
and
I mean, for fans, I'm not talking about for players. For fans, the NFL is just a better thing because you know that you can be in Green Bay, Wisconsin, and have a $100 million quarterback. You can be in Kansas City, Missouri, and have a $500 million quarterback.
Yeah.
And you can have those players want to be in those towns and play there because you can make your money for State Farm or whatever from Kansas City or Green Bay if you're a high enough profile player in the right position. Now, that doesn't work for every position because you want to maybe get out and make some money on some other side of it. If you want to be a movie mogul, that ain't going to happen. It's what's your goal, right? What do you want to do? Mm. It just works different in this sport. But there is something about these franchises, and that comes from the leadership. It comes from people like Dayton Moore. And say what you want about the Glass family, but I think John Sherman's group, like the way they took care of these minor league players during the pandemic and the scouts, I mean, there's something about that, and that's about leadership.
I think there are 24 or 25 cities in this country that have both an MLB and NFL franchise that you feel pretty good as a Kansas City and knowing that you've got two professionally run franchises with good people at the very top. I mean, that seems like something it would be basic, but
it hasn't always been the case, but it certainly is right now. It's a good time.
There have been times where you wondered at the top of both, especially for football. But the other difference being able to pay and not pay. There really isn't a position like quarterback in baseball where you can just say, okay, we're going to splurge here. An ace starting pitcher is about the closest you could get, but you couldn't spend, you know, there's no Patrick Mahomes of baseball where one guy ties it up. So it's a lot tougher to get that done. We've known it's been a 10-year deal, clearly, and one of the topics probably hasn't been visited enough is could it have been a shorter deal? Of course, Sam McDowell, who was friend of the program and is here quite often.
He's no friend of mine.
Always one of the smartest guys in the room.
I like Sam McDowell. He just doesn't like me.
His pulse rate never gets above 40. I've never seen the man ever get excited about anything.
You know, his BMI is just a touch over 40,
though. Is it? I looked at him one time and I said, how are you alive? You're the thinnest
human
being I've
ever seen.
Where
do you get your nourishment?
But he just went, yeah. You know, he just never gets too crazy. He asked Brent Veach if there had been discussions about a shorter deal and what the forces were that drove them to the longer deal.
Well, listen, I mean, you know, Chris and Lee, and I don't want to speak for Pat, but just my take on this was, you know, they wanted, you know, they had two big wants, and that was protection for Pat and then surrounding Pat with talent. And, you know, Coach and I know as well as anybody that if you if Pat Mahomes is healthy and there's talent around him, it's unstoppable. And so, you know, the framework was how can we get him, you know, the most in protections and at the same time continually to allow him to have great talent around him. So it kind of started in the longer term. Again, and this goes back to the agents working for the player, Pat being very mature for a young age and understanding that I have a great city, great fan base, great ownership, Hall of Fame head coach. It's going to be hard to beat this. And how can we put, you know, how could we put Pat in a position where he is the highest paid player in the game, which he is. And on top of that, do so in a format that will continue to allow us to, you know, have talent around him. And so, again, I give credit to their staff of just wanting to do a legacy deal and not just a cash deal. And that's what people have to understand. And saying that, it's easy to say that, but you have to have a special and a unique person like we have in Pat to understand that, hey, listen, I'm going to make more money than I'll ever know what to do with. And I want to see our organization reward other players. And I want to see, myself surrounded with these players like the Badger, and Tyreek and all these guys. So, I joke with Chris. I said, it's almost impossible to do the biggest contract in sports history and have a player look, unselfish, but somehow Pat again is able to do this in a unique way where he's the highest paid player in the game and will be for a long time, yet does so in a way that allows us to reward his teammates along the way. It's very unique, and I don't think the city should take that for granted. I know they won't, but again, I think back to my opening statement that this contract and the length speaks to Pat's love and commitment to Kansas City. He wants to win, and he wants to do it here in Kansas City.
Yeah, yep. I mean, we'll see. I mean, I've seen some people out there a little bit trying to get through the thing and saying, oh, it's not the greatest deal in the world for him. But that's the point. This was a partnership. That's the way it should be with a franchise quarterback.
Yeah.
And a franchise. That's what you hope to have. You don't want it to be, worker boss type right. thing. And when you're dealing with someone who's this special, it's got to be that way for almost every player, okay? And there's probably some jealousy out there in the locker room somewhere, but here's the deal. Be a quarterback. I mean, that's the way it works, man.
It seems like there would be people saying, yes, he probably left money on the table, but to say that it's why is he taking less? And, well, that's a lot of money. Those two things don't seem like they can sit side by side on the shelf.
If you're a long enough deal, they can.
But yeah, a long enough deal that they can. But as we talked about a little bit earlier, I mean, he's a guy that one of the reasons we think he was so involved in the deal was because it wasn't just, hey, go get me my money. I want a specific framework. I want a life that's this way. And so to get that, I have to take an active part in it. And that might have been why it ended up the way it did. Mahomes was also asked the same question. If there were discussions about the shorter deal, why he chose to go longer.
I went in there with an open mind. I went in there with like those two concepts. I wanted to keep great players around me and obviously reward them for being great players and support and being a great teammate and everything like that. And I wanted the security that I've always talked about. And I feel like once this concept came to me, I was all aboard. It was all about the details at that point. And I thought the Chiefs organization did a great job. And I had a lot of phone calls with Chris and Lee and them, interrupted a few golf games about every single day. And so I went in with the open mind, and when the concept came to me, I loved the idea and we were able to do it the right way. And I'm excited for the future ahead.
Should be excited.
Once the concept came to him, he was all good. Let's just fill in the blanks.
Well, there's always another way to do something, mm-hmm. right? I mean, that's the thing that you learn. Contracts used to be contracts, and then they started thinking about other ways to do things. And this is a revolutionary kind of idea on how to do it. And it's, it should be happening with a quarterback who's been revolutionary here in Kansas City.
Yeah. And I'm just happy to finally, 24 hours later, or 20 whatever hours later, to be able to find out what guarantee mechanisms were.
Well, I still don't exactly know all of that, but it's
the guarantee
it's out
mechanisms
there.
Are
find a way
are
to do
when,
it.
When the right. money in a particular given year becomes guaranteed. And
right.
It generally has been 1 year, sometimes it's 2 years, and sometimes it's a split where it's the chunk of money from one season becomes guaranteed in two different dates.
Yeah.
So
get it done. And
that's what guarantee mechanisms are.
When's apparently. The money hit the account? That's the most important part that people want to know.
60 this week.
Yeah.
Go, not getting it, but it's yeah. becomes guaranteed.
Becomes
this week.
Guaranteed.
And then another 103 by this time of year from now.
But still, Bobby Bonilla is going to be getting paid beyond this contract. I don't know. That's the way these things work.
The program with Soren Petro.
I got the best hair in the room. Again, if you're sitting with Frank Bull and Pete Enick, hey, who cares?
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back into the program with Soren Petro. He's not here. 2 days in a row, he didn't come to work. He actually worked. We made him get on that Zoom with Mahomes and Reed and Veach. We've been playing that stuff all day. But now it is time to talk college football with one of our favorites here on Sports Radio 810. It's Ben Kirchival from CBS Sports. How's everything going for you right now, Ben?
It's going. I mean, just one day at a time, wearing masks, washing my hands, keeping my distance. It's our new normal. I don't know why there is a percentage of the population who's unwilling to adopt it, but I would venture that percentage, however high or low it may be, is part of the reason why we're still in this predicament.
Hey, you know, there's a percentage of the population that just won't conform to a lot of things. I drive around and I see people with no seatbelts on. I see people with no helmets on motorcycles. I don't get it. I don't know. Maybe I'm just a big baby. I wear a seatbelt. It's just weird. It's just, hey, man, that's a deep conversation that is depressing in many ways. So let's talk about something that's even more depressing. Let's just start right at the beginning. I don't think that we're going to have college football starting probably on time. I think we're not going to have college football the way we know it. But are we going to have enough of a college football season at the Power 5 level to feel like it's somewhat even a percentage of 30% normal?
Yeah. I mean, we'll have college football. It would be a nuclear winter for universities if there wasn't. I think everyone pretty much understands how much is riding on there being college football from a financial standpoint. I mean, just even before we would get to a season, we've seen the pitfalls of everything related to COVID, athletic programs slashing sports, you know, non-revenue making sports. And it's so, for not to be college football, I mean, you would be talking about a massive, massive hole that these institutions would have to try to climb their way out of, many of which I don't know that they would be able to. But again, there are so many factors related to that in the modern society. That's a whole other conversation in and of itself. But to your point, yeah, I think there's going to be college football. Now, what that's going to look like, I think we will probably have a much clearer idea than we have right now in probably the next 3 to 4 weeks. Because if nothing else, that's your decision time. You have to absolutely decide if you're going to have college football in the fall in any capacity, whether you push that starting date back, sort of split up the season between maybe like a fall and a spring, or whether you say, look, we can't do this at all. We don't have clear-cut testing and tracing. Cases are spiking the instant these players and staffers get back onto campus. We need to push this thing to the spring. The Ivy League is considered maybe the first and foremost league to really implement this, just like they were in March when they canceled the basketball tournament. So I think a lot of possibilities still on the table, but we're definitely entering sort of the 11th hour as far as what that decision is going to be.
Ben Kercheval from CBS Sports is our guest. And I think, Ben, one of the things that is it's a big factor in this is college football coaches have generally been the kings of their fiefdom, right? And I think they're mm-hmm. learning that they don't have the power they used to have. And I think they're learning that they're not going to be able to do things the way they've always done them, right? We've seen that in a lot of different ways. They're going to have to probably just realize that maybe they don't get 6 weeks of practice. Maybe they don't get to do all these things. If they want to have games, they're going to have to change the way they do this. If they want to get their fat paychecks, they're going to have to change the way they do this. Is there enough of a sense that these guys can adapt and deal with things that aren't the way they like them, that they will go along with new normal, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, they'll adapt. The one thing that college football coaches preach all the time is you have to be able to adapt within the chaos. But there are obviously a few factors here that will dictate how well certain schools, certain coaches are able to do that. Do you bring back a veteran team that kind of knows the playbooks inside and out? Do you have continuity on your staff, or are you bringing in a new defensive coordinator, a new offensive coordinator, and you're breaking in four of, you know, five new starters along the offensive line that are like sophomores? Yeah, I mean, those are the things that will determine probably how much a team is affected by the lack of spring practice and whatever modifications you have to make in your offseason and your preseason. Did you have to halt your voluntary workouts that we know really aren't voluntary? Are guys, in the best shape that they're normally in coming back? I think all of those things are going to make up, you know, just how well a team is able to perform under these adaptations. But, you know, as far as coaches, you know, adjusting and all of this, I think it's also worth pointing out that even though it's been kind of under, you know, different circumstances, if you will, you can kind of tie the whole Black Lives Matter movement into this in the sense that if you're going to ask, you know, these players to come and play in the middle of a pandemic in which they don't get a salary and you get millions of dollars, I think right now you can tie all of this into the fact that players are absolutely more aware of their value than ever before in terms of understanding, like, look, there is no season without us. You need us to play. And if you're going to be providing scholarship protection amidst all of this COVID stuff, then, you know, look, you understand that we have some leverage here. You can't just tell us we need you back on May 1st to be like Mike Gundy did for Oklahoma City. Like, we want him back on May 1st. Like, for what? So you can get paid millions of dollars and we don't get paid anything, and so we can put our safety at risk by playing, you know, this sport? I think this is a very interesting time because I don't think anyone would have ever predicted that a pandemic like this would have sort of shifted the not necessarily the power, but the perception of how much leverage those athletes actually do have.
You know, it's interesting, Ben, because the leverage that players have kind of started here in our area in Columbia in 2015. And at the time when that was happening down at Mizzou with the concerned students group and, you know, the threat to not play against BYU, that's almost 5 years ago now. And, you know, it kind of was a thing for a while, and it probably hurt the University of Missouri in recruiting because people always negatively recruit against whatever, right? You don't want to go to this campus. This is where there's racism and there's poop swastikas and all this stuff. But I think the power the players had to you know, make, you know, a coach like Gary Pinkel fall in line with what they wanted, right, was kind of lost for a few years. But now it seems like there's real empowerment in, quote unquote, when I say minority, I mean small groups of people who have less power, not necessarily a race or whatever, all over the country. And it's an unknown, really, probably where this is going to lead with college football.
Yeah, change happens incrementally, too. And the first ones through the wall always get bloody, right? It doesn't always happen for you or, you know, for them the first time around. I mean, you know, Colin Kaepernick, what are you taking me, 5 years ago, 4 years ago?
Yeah, four.
I mean, it's been a minute. And, you know, the reaction now is, well, there's certainly still some, you know, division among people who, you know, some of which – you know, so there's a certain group of population who still don't get it. I think a lot of people now are probably more understanding of what he was kneeling for in the first place. You know, but that was 4 years ago. And now you're talking about in the wake of George Floyd's murder and Breonna Taylor's murder. And stuff. Now there's a lot more eye-opening. And then, you know, surely the next time this unfortunately and inevitably happens, I think you're going to see an even greater push. So, I mean, these things happen, you know, not just once, although certainly the last couple of months have felt like maybe an explosion of emotion for probably a couple of reasons. But, you know, I think every time, you know, that change gets a little bit wider and that door opens a little bit more.
Ben Kirchvoll from CBS Sports is our guest. Before we get to our Final Four, we have to ask everybody about Patrick Mahomes, because Patrick Mahomes is the king of Kansas City. He's the king of maybe the National Football League. Maybe he's the king of the world. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, he can do anything at this point. You've been covering the Big 12 for a long time. When you watched Patrick Mahomes play at Texas Tech, did you think that he would be someone who would get a $500 million contract, be an MVP in the league, and win a Super Bowl this early in his career?
No, but that's such a hard thing to predict. I mean, I think a lot of people who watched college football knew that he was a special talent. But, you know, there are a lot of guys who are very special in college and doesn't necessarily translate to the NFL, or, you know, it doesn't maybe always live up to everything that they're, you know, supposed to be based on where they were picked in the NFL draft. College and the NFL are very, very different animals. There are guys who go really sort of unnoticed in college and then they explode in the NFL. So it's a real inexact science, but I think a lot of people who follow college football very closely understood what a real rare talent he was from an arm strength and a mobility standpoint. I will say this, though, based on how great he was at Texas Tech and where Cliff Kingsbury is now, you're looking at this going like, they went under 500 together. They did not – they had one winning season together. They had one bowl game together. It was like the Texas Bowl.
In his sophomore like year. That's what we've been joking
about.
Yeah,
that's the crazy part.
He had his last year of college football. Cliff Kingsbury couldn't make a bowl game with Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
And now Cliff Kingsbury, who got fired at that school, is a head coach in the NFL, and Patrick Mahomes is a $500 million contract. It's crazy to me. And that wasn't like some insanely stacked Big 12, right? That wasn't like...
If you have Patrick Mahomes, and I mean, look, they didn't have a good defense at the time and stuff, but like, it's not like it was Patrick Mahomes and 21 other scrubs. Like Jakeem Grant was a pretty good receiver there for, like, they had like some all Big 12
talent.
Kiki
Cutie
guys.
Was there.
You had some guys. You had enough guys that even if your defense wasn't all that good, the way that that conference is positioned, you should have been able to do more than what they did.
You should have been able to slide into a bowl game is basically what's the lowest standard. It's crazy, man.
Yeah.
It's crazy stuff. So, the thing I think about everything is time and circumstance and where you are, right? Now, listen, Patrick Mahomes was not recruited by everybody in the country. He didn't have a bunch of, Texas wanted him to play safety maybe. I mean, so, people miss on things like that. And, not everyone in the NFL wanted to draft him. He made it to 10 and maybe would have gone further, but the Chiefs thought he was the guy. So they traded up and got him, and he couldn't have found a more perfect place to be. That's what it's like, right? When you find the perfect place with the perfect coach and you do all these things, you could do something special. I remember on draft night, I was not disappointed they drafted Patrick Mahomes, but I personally said they should have drafted Deshaun Watson. And I do think this, I think Deshaun Watson, if he would have gotten Patrick Mahomes' position, I don't know if he'd be the MVP, throw 50 touchdowns, $500 million contract, but I know he'd be better than he's been with the Houston Texans. And I know if Patrick Mahomes was drafted by the Houston Texans, he wouldn't have been the MVP yet. I mean, it's just kind of one of those things. You get in the right spot, you can find your way, and he couldn't have landed in a better place, and it's worked out as well as it possibly could for anyone. I don't think this is in anyone's wildest dreams that it could be right here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, luck, circumstance certainly always plays a factor in these things. For Deshaun Watson, I will say the best thing you can do for a young quarterback's development is trade away his best wide receiver.
That's the
way to do it.
Oh, boy. Bill O'Brien's the butt of everyone's jokes. That's how it goes. All right. Ben Kirchhoff is our guest from CBS Sports, and we'll have time for our final four here from the Kansas Lottery. And let's just, in a vacuum here, let's say there's college football, okay? Is there a surprise team that nobody is thinking about right now who you'll be like in maybe mid-October, November, you're like, wow, why are they in the top 10? Is there someone out there who you've got your eye on at this point?
Top 10? This might be a little bit of a stretch, but I think people are sleeping on Louisville.
Okay.
I mean, I think Scott Satterfield's done a really good job last year with them. Mecole Cunningham's your quarterback. No one's talking about him because, one, Trevor Lawrence sucks up all the oxygen, and whatever oxygen is left, people are giving to Sam Howell in North Carolina and Mac Brown. But they were two, I don't want to say not similar teams last year, but they won a similar number of games. If I remember correctly, it might have been like 6-7, something like that. But there's a lot of love going to Mac Brown and North Carolina and Sam Howell. But keep an eye on Mecole Cunningham and Louisville. I mean, I think they're a pretty strong contender for, I don't know, maybe necessarily not top 10, but I think a surprise team that not enough people are probably paying attention to.
And how about the Missouri Tigers, new coach and Eli Drinkwitz, disappointing year last year, obviously. Can they make a bowl game in the first year, assuming we play 12 games, all that?
I don't know. I think Tennessee's going to be better. That's the big thing. Tennessee's going to be better. Kentucky is probably – they return so much in their trenches. I mean, that's four teams right there, just in one division, that you got to try to get past one of them. I mean, what's a successful season there? Georgia's good. Florida's good. Tennessee's better. Kentucky's just the floor has been elevated for them. That's four teams in your division right there. Can you get one of those? Maybe two? It's going to be awfully tough. I don't know off the top of my head who they draw out of the West either. I mean, I think you might flirt with bowl eligibility. I don't know that I'd give them much more than that, though.
All right, in the Big 12, most people think Oklahoma will find a way, even though they have a brand-new quarterback, into the Big 12 title game because that's the way it has worked so far for them. Is there a possible surprise Big 12 championship game participant?
I mean, a lot of people are putting their money on Oklahoma State because they give you pretty good odds and they return everybody on that offense. I mean, it's filthy. Chuba Hubbard's back. If he's not protesting, he's back. Tylan Wallace is probably the best receiver in that conference entering the year. Spencer Sanders, I think, has some room to grow, but I think he's very talented. So I think some people are putting their money on Oklahoma State. Iowa State might be in that conversation, but I would say Oklahoma State is probably your sort of your trendy pick, maybe to the point of being a little bit overhyped, but I think they're right there.
And finally, I know Seren's been asking a lot of people during the non-sports shutdown, is there something you've been watching, you know, you caught up on streaming or maybe something you'd never watched before that you filled your time without sports, or are you just watching old sports?
No, actually, I don't really watch sports at all. I always use the offseason as my palate cleanser to not watch sports. But I tell you what, my friend told me about it, and once I started watching, I couldn't get off of it. It's called Letterkenny.
Oh, it's weird. That's a weird show, man.
Yeah, you have to. It's a real acquired taste. It's like, if someone described it, and I can't remember where I saw it. They said it's like Parks and Rec for day drinking, and I was like, there's a little bit of truth to that. It's very weird. You have to be super in tune with the dialect and the language and the alliteration, like the pacing of it. I mean, the way that they do it. But as a former like theater person, like they're super on top of their craft. Like it's filled with like really underrated actors, language people. But yeah, it's a real acquired taste. My fiance was not super huge on it. They had me at the third episode, which was Fart Book. The moment they did Fart Book, I was like, okay, this is like the greatest thing.
It's kind of a guy show. It's my daughter's boyfriend loves the show, and she's like, kind of. My wife and we watched some of it. She's like, I don't know, but I laugh. So I mean, it's not bad. It's not bad. Hey Ben, hopefully we'll have some football to watch and talk about as we go. You stay safe the rest of the summer, okay?
All right, man. Appreciate it. You too.
All right. There's Ben Kercheval from CBS Sports here on the program.
The Program with Seren Petro.
Curtis.
Yeah, sounds good.
Thank you.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We're almost done for the day, but there's just a few more things we'd like to share.
But there's still more.
Here's the kicker.
Here's the kicker of this whole thing.
On the Program.
But first, the Joe's Kansas City Barbecue burnt end of the hour answer.
Patrick Mahomes.
John Buck, 40 today. Oh. Can he be older than that?
Should be.
One of the three players who came to the Royals in the Carlos Beltran trade. Of course, it was a three-team trade. Astros and A's.
Jed and I really disappointed you because we got
sending
them so easily.
Octavio Dotel to Houston. What two players came here?
We both said.
Jed got the tough one.
Mike Wood.
First.
I got
Mike
some
Wood.
Stories about that guy that aren't safe for the air.
My Wood. Fun ones. Tony Pena.
I would not
my
hesitate
wood.
To use my wood.
Yeah. And then Mark Tian.
The other? Well, the all-time fan favorites.
Love Mark Tian.
A staple in the program and the years
he was
here.
It's the guy they had to have.
Mark Tian, yes. He's great sense of humor. I would have loved for that 18-homer second half of the season, whenever it was, 06, to have turned into something, but he just didn't quite have it. But he's coaching, I think, yeah,
wonderful
out
guy.
In California. So
Mark Tian looked like a human Lego piece.
Yeah, he was a little put together that way.
Yeah,
that right.
Married a Division I volleyball player. I'm guessing their kids are going to be good at something in sports.
Maybe so. Maybe so. Let's hear now from Patrick Mahomes. Heard of him. He's good at sports.
I've heard about him.
Yeah, press conference
his
today.
His kids might be pretty
via
good.
Via Zoom, as he signed his 10-year extension, 12 years. He's going to be a Chief for past when I'm probably doing this. Let's say that. Here's a Patrick Mahomes talking about trying to make something special here in Kansas City for a long time.
It's an exciting time. I'm just glad that I get to continue building this legacy in Kansas City. Obviously, with everything going on in the world with COVID and all this different stuff, to have this security to go into the community and be able to give back, I can't wait to not only build this legacy on the field but off of it. And I'm excited for the future ahead for not only me but the Kansas City Chiefs and the communities that have brought me up so far.
There's Patrick Mahomes, and hopefully we'll have football. Hopefully we'll have baseball. They had an intra-squad game out at the K today. Mike Matheny, Royals manager, said that went all right.
Another level of intensity, giving the guys a chance to compete. But I thought we did a pretty nice job of staying in the strike zone. Saw some nice swings at times. You know, I'm not a lot of offense, but kind of talked about that, how we thought the pitching would be a little bit ahead of the hitting at this point. But, you know, watching Nicky Lopez and Mondy both, you know, put together some really good swings. MJ had a nice out on some good velocity. I think you're also seeing guys trying to get used to Midwest Kansas City humidity and seeing a lot of trying to find a dry spot on them already, which is what they're good training. And so trying to figure out that process, trying to understand what the league's going to allow still, where you're talking about towels and that sort of thing. So just another step forward.
Step forward on the field with the intra-squad game, but a step back off the field in the COVID testing zone, Curtis.
Brad Keller and Ryan O'Hearn testing positive for COVID-19. Keller was symptomatic, said it felt like it was an allergy attack. O'Hearn not symptomatic, so two Royals testing positive.
On top of the fact that Salvador Perez is already away from the club right now because he tested positive over the weekend. So that's three players who the Royals have had who are positive at this point. So we've got some teams not practicing because they're not getting their test results in and such. Down in the bubble for where MLS is supposed to get started playing tomorrow night, there will not be a game with Nashville tomorrow night because they have enough positive tests they're not going to play. FC Dallas is already not going to play in the tournament.
Everything's
so we'll
in pencil, isn't it?
Yeah, a lot of stuff in pencil right now. We will hear more from Sporting KC tonight at 8. Sporting KC show comes your way. Got NFL Live KC coming your way at 7. Our good friend Joshua Briscoe, 9 o'clock with Almost Entirely Sports. I know Seth Kaiser is going to be there. I heard Seth Kaiser doesn't want Mahomes on the team. I don't know. Tune in to find out. Do you believe that?
Those are bold words, but...
Petro will be back tomorrow if we haven't ruined everything for him. I don't know. We'll see.